federal tax on gas and the 24.4-cent federal tax on diesel between Memorial Day and Labor Day would assist cash-strapped motorists. Clinton calls for a windfall profits tax on oil companies to make up for the lost revenue. Fuel taxes pay for the construction and maintenance of roads and bridges. Democrat Barack Obama criticizes the gas tax holiday, saying that the savings would be small and could hurt construction workers who work on highway projects. Well, today on Radio Times, we take a look at the gas tax holiday as part of a broader discussion about energy and economic policy. And we have two guests who have joined us by telephone. Paul Roberts is a journalist who writes about the complex interplay of economics, technology, and the environment. He wrote a book called The End of Oil, and he's got a forthcoming book called The End of Food. And Paul Roberts, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Marty.
And Chris Knittel, also with us. He's an associate professor of economics at the University of California at Davis. He's also a faculty research fellow at the National Bureau of Economic Research and a visiting research associate at the University of California Energy Institute and a faculty associate of the Institute of Transportation at UC Davis. And Chris Knittel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me start with you, if I could, Chris Knittel. Looking at this proposed gas tax holiday, if it were going to go into effect, looking at the average driver, do you know how much money they'd actually save?
Well, actually very little. So the federal gas tax is 18.4 cents a gallon. So that would turn or yield about a $10 per driver reduction in their gas bill per month. So not very large.
So not very large, about $30 over the course of a summer, a three-month summer?
That's right. That's right.
And what about for truckers? Because they also talked about this federal tax on diesel.
So the diesel tax is larger. It's about 24 cents. And truckers obviously use much more gas than the typical residential driver. So it would save them a fair bit more money. But all in all, it's still a pretty bad idea.
And what kind of an idea do you think it is, Paul Roberts?
Well, I agree. I mean, it's in terms of its fiscal stimulus impact, it's minuscule. And as I'm sure Chris would argue, it's going to probably have the opposite effect in the sense that it will encourage drivers to use more gasoline, thereby driving prices right back up, probably to where they would have been had the tax not been relieved.
Is it a good, though, political idea, Paul Roberts?
No, well, I mean, the thing is,
in the cynical sense of that question?
I think what it reflects is that no one has an easy, quick fix for the problem we're in right now, and politicians are struggling. I mean, they know that voters are scared. I mean, it's not just voters are angry now. Voters are scared that gas and diesel prices and energy prices and food prices are going to keep going up. They're beginning to feel like there's no ceiling here, and they want some answers from politicians who have been sort of, up to this point, fairly mute in terms of solutions. So this is sort of a desperate campaign year bumper sticker solution that really wouldn't solve anything. It would probably make the problem worse.
But let me go back to you, Chris Knittel. But there certainly are people in this country who are struggling not just to pay for filling up their car at the pump, but also other energy costs. I'm thinking of essentially low-wage workers. And if they have to pay $40 or $50 to fill up their car, that really eats into a very small paycheck. Is there something that can be done to help these people out?
Well, there is. The biggest factor is relieving our dependency on oil. And in hindsight, we should have done this beginning in the mid-1980s by actually taxing gas and giving consumers an incentive to reduce their dependency on oil. Since we didn't do that, we're in a bit of a trouble, and it's gonna be costly for some. But the key is that policies like this will just perpetuate our dependency on oil, and they'll send the wrong signal to consumers that our U.S. government is not committed to reducing our oil dependency or fighting climate change or even resolving issues in the Middle East.
But do you think, Paul Roberts, that something can be done to help, let's say, you know, low-income workers who are really feeling the cost of, you know, $3.50 a gallon or maybe $4 a gallon in some parts of the country?
Yeah, but I think it's going to have to be going to have to distinguish that policy from an energy policy. So you're going to have to tackle it in the form of, say, extending unemployment benefits, coming up with ways to do tax credits or rebates. You know, it's going to be more of a social welfare answer, and no one likes to hear that kind of a policy in this sort of post-welfare era that we're in. But I think we have to face facts. The people that are getting hurt most by these higher prices are those people of lower income levels. And to sort of try to address this with a one-size-fits-all gas tax relief is, I agree with Chris completely. It sends so many wrong signals. It's going to make the energy price problem worse, and it really does ignore the underlying drivers for these price spikes in the first place. So it's wrong on so many different levels, and I'm hopeful that the sort of negative reaction that it's received is going to be sufficient to kill it, but, you know, who knows? Stranger things have happened.
But has there been a negative reaction?
Oh, I think so.
I'm hearing it this morning on the radio, and I certainly have heard it and read it and seen it other places, but I don't see at least the two proponents of this idea backing off. Paul Roberts?
Well, I mean, it would be very tough for them to hold this up as a proposal and then suddenly say, oh, I guess I was wrong. Mm-hmm. If you listen to the sort of the expert opinion, I haven't heard a credible economist come out in favor of it. I've heard people arguing that, you know, we really need to take a serious look at helping people with a lower income, but not with this measure, with more direct measures. And again and again, the assessment, the analysis of this proposal points to both its minuscule economic impact in terms of helping people and its rather large negative impact in terms of exacerbating our energy problems. So, you know, you'll certainly hear when they have the man on the street interviews, you'll hear people welcoming this kind of relief, but I'm almost sure that if the people who are being interviewed did the math here and penciled out what they'd actually saved, and if they were shown how reducing the price of any commodity, fuel or anything, increases demand and thereby puts price pressure right back on that, it'll bring the price right back up, I think you'd see a lot of people scratching their heads and wondering, why is the government talking about this as if it was a solution?
Let me go back to you, Chris Knittle, because Hillary Clinton said in order to offset the money that goes into the Highway Trust Fund, she would want to institute a windfall profits tax on oil companies. What do you make of that idea?
Well, in general, economists don't like windfall taxes because, again, they send the wrong signal to producers. So essentially what you're telling these firms is that they made investments, those investments worked out, and we're going to take some of that money from you. So in a longer term sense, it creates disincentives for firms to take risks, to invest in projects that may or may not make money, because they know that if they happen to be successful, then some of those profits will be taken away.
And yet some oil companies, I'm looking actually at BP and Shell. This is something that was in the Philadelphia Inquirer this week. BP and Shell, whose first quarter profits rose 63% and 25% respectively.
Right.
That's not, you know, good ammunition for some kind of a windfall profits tax?
Well, they're certainly making a lot of money. There's no denying that. But they're actually they're not the ones creating the problems here. They're certainly profiting from these higher prices. But the world oil market is just that. It's a world oil market, and what's driving prices up are not things that Exxon and Shell and BP are doing. It's the analogy I like to use is imagine a freeze in Florida that wipes out all the Florida oranges. California orange producers are going to benefit greatly from that. They didn't cause the freeze, but their profits would go way up. And not many people would push for a windfall tax in that situation.
Well, let me turn back to you, Paul Roberts, as someone who wrote a book called The End of Oil. Is that what we're dealing with here?
Well, yeah. I mean, really the two primary things driving the price of oil today are supply having trouble keeping up with demand, and that demand is coming in large part from booming Asia. And then on the other hand, we have a weak a dollar that's weak, and since oil is priced in U.S. dollars, every time the dollar is worth less, it takes more of those dollars to buy the same barrel of oil, so the price goes up. And really there's nothing in the near term to suggest that either of those situations, either the supply situation, demand situation, or the weak dollar, are going to change. And so, really, you know, again, this goes back to the reality that politicians have to face, that there isn't a quick fix for this. And again, you know, if we look at some of the, you know, sort of, in my view, there are very few positives that come out of a gas tax holiday, and a huge pile of negatives. And one we haven't really talked about a lot is, you know, the loss of transportation dollars and funds that would come from this. You know, Senator Clinton may talk about replacing this with a windfall tax, but again, a windfall tax is very complicated to manage. It's also politically very tough. And in the meantime, you've foregone, you know, billions of dollars in funds that go toward maintaining our infrastructure at a time when our infrastructure is falling apart. At the same time, a sizable fraction of the gas tax goes towards mass transit, public transit. And keep in mind, that public transit is what we are holding up as an alternative to motorists who can't afford to put gas in their cars. We're saying, okay, get out of your cars and take the bus, take the train. Well, at the same time, we're saying, yes, but we won't fund those to the degree that we were. And think of the signal this sends to the various industries that work on the infrastructure. All of these companies that are gearing up to work on highways or transportation systems, public transit systems, all of them are asking, okay, what does this mean for the projects that we thought we were going to be working on? Should we be hiring more or laying people off? I mean, the ramifications that this sends through the economy are really going to undermine a lot of the small amount of progress that we've made in terms of moving this country away from a car-centric transportation system. And so, again, I think this is, you know, absolutely the wrong direction to be moving in. The challenge here is that the correct move here is something that no one wants to hear, and that is we need more taxes on fuel. We need to make fuel more expensive so that, you know, so that motorists and business generally understand that the era of cheap energy is over. It's not just a matter of waiting for the summer to be over. I mean, we're going to be paying more for fuel in the form of a tax or in the form of just market-driven prices, whether we like it or not, and we need to embrace that reality.
Well, you know, we're almost up on a break here. Chris Knittle, we're talking about the Highway Trust Fund. If there were, and I'm just making this, you know, a speculative question, I mean, if there were a tax holiday, how much money would be lost to the Highway Trust Fund? And we're almost up on a break, but do you have the answer to that?
It's about $9 billion. So the tax itself is 18.4 cents, and 16 cents goes directly to the Highway Trust Fund.
We're going to take that short break, get back to our guests, and also open up the phones. What do you think about a gas tax holiday, an idea proposed by presidential candidates John McCain and Hillary Clinton, the idea of suspending the gas tax for the summer driving season? 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Paul Roberts and Chris Knittle are our guests, staying with us after this short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Penn's College of General Studies supports WHYY and offers more than 200 undergraduate and graduate courses during Penn's summer sessions. Applications will be accepted until May 5th for the 12-week summer session and 6-week summer session 1 classes beginning May 27th. Applications for the 6-week summer session 2 classes beginning July 7th will be accepted until June 16th. Information at 215-898-7326 or penncgs.org.
We're very near the end of the spring membership drive here at WHYY, and we have a challenge from the Independence Foundation. If we hear from 350 people during Radio Times during this spring drive, they will give us $10,000. Here's that number to call, and it's 1-888-345-9499. You can also pledge online at WHYY.org. It's important that we stay on track and meet this challenge as well. Thank you very much.
Christiana Care supports WHYY and your efforts to stay healthy. Christiana Care is offering a free online heart risk assessment available at christianacare.org/heart test. By answering a few questions about your health and lifestyle, you can find out if you could be at risk for heart disease. Online at christianacare.org/heart test for an online heart risk assessment.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking about whether a a fuel tax or a gas tax holiday makes economic or energy sense. What would the short-term and long-term consequences be? And I do want to get to a discussion about what's a smart energy policy. Our guests are Chris Knittel. He's an associate professor of economics at the University of California, Davis, also a faculty research fellow at the National Bureau of Economic Research, and Paul Roberts. He's a journalist who writes about the interplay of economics, technology, and the environment. His book written a year or so ago called The End of Oil, and he's got a forthcoming book called The End of Food, and we've got a full bank of calls here. Chris Knittel, let me just toss a question to you before we get to our callers. In terms of creating, perhaps it's a tax policy, but a tax policy that would create a better energy policy, and I'm assuming the bottom line, tax policy is about encouraging behavior and discouraging behavior. What would be a tax policy that would result in the less consumption of oil?
Well, what we need is what's known as a carbon tax. So we tax fuels proportional to their carbon dioxide component. And then we can use those revenues. The beauty of a carbon tax is that it would generate revenues. We can then give those revenues back disproportionately to lower-income consumers, and we could use the revenues to beef up our public transportation system. All of these factors would push us away from our dependency on oil, push us into more fuel-efficient cars, public transportation, et cetera. And in the long run, that would be much better to the U.S. economy and actually to the world as a whole, given that we're beginning to worry about global climate change.
And what kind of revenues would be gotten from a carbon tax?
Well, the revenues would be quite substantial. I know, so I've done the figures in California, and a $30 carbon tax, which is what British Columbia recently passed, a $30 carbon tax would generate about $14 billion in revenue. And in California right now, our budget shortfall is $10 billion this year, so it would overcome that budget shortfall.
Is that $30 a year?
$30. So the carbon tax would be $30 per ton of carbon, which would translate into an extra 30-cent tax for a gallon of gas.
You want to comment on that, Paul Robertson? We'll get to our callers. The idea of a carbon tax?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we need to be talking about here, because it not only discourages excessive fuel consumption, but it also encourages progress in dealing with the larger issue, which is climate. But again, you know, talking about a 30-cent a gallon tax at a time like this is politically very tough. You know, people want to hear about less taxes, not more, and that is the paradox of sensible energy policy.
And because we're in the throes of a not just a political season, but a very contentious one.
Yeah, well, any time, no one really cares about energy until it's expensive, and yet that is the one time when you really have to be talking about tough solutions. So it's a very hard and challenging issue for politicians to deal with meaningfully. So they don't.
Let me get a couple of callers in on the conversation, then I know we have to say goodbye to you, Chris Knittel, and Paul Roberts. You'll be staying with us for the rest of the hour. We've got Jim from Abington joining us. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. Your Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I can appreciate all of the comments that the guests are making. They certainly make a lot of sense. I think that it's a more complex issue than presented, though, because there are many summer tourist industry people who are going to be very much harmed by the high price of fuel right now. And, you know, the guests are making comments about the problem really related to, the commuter. And I think that one of the ways that we can offset some of these problems is getting SUVs higher taxed, encouraging public transportation to work and so forth. But we probably will not take our vacation this summer, which we can only do through driving, unless we can get some relief from these high price of gasoline.
But Jim, and just a quick follow up question. But both of our guests looking sort of across the board, generally speaking, that the savings for an individual would be about $30 over the course of a summer. That's a make or break increase for you?
Certainly, it would be more than $30 on a cross country trip that we were planning. So, yes, for commuting, okay, it would only be about $30 a month to work.
Okay,
but for taking a vacation, that changes the equation dramatically. And again, certainly there are other ways of reducing carbon emissions and our carbon footprints beyond this critical summer season where we'll see many tourist-based industries go out of business because of the lack
of... I hear you, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Chris Canito, what do you think?
Well, one point I wanted to add was that although the tax will be reduced by 18.4 cents, we can't expect all of that to be passed through to the consumer. Actually, taxes, the burden of a tax is shared by both the consumer and the producer. In summer times where refining capacity is quite tight, prices are driven up not because of necessarily of demand, but because of the reduction in capacity. In those types of instances, actually reducing a tax will have the price reduction will be much smaller than the reduction in the tax. So consumers can't expect and shouldn't expect the full 18.4 cents to be passed on through in savings at the pump.
And just a follow-up to you, Chris. Is there any evidence if there were this gas tax holiday that the oil companies would keep prices at a lower level or wouldn't take advantage of this price drop?
Well, and that's again the point that during the summer season when we are capacity constrained, prices are going to be driven up. Even if we reduce this tax. So part of that tax is whether we like it or not, part of that tax reduction is going to be going into the pockets of the gasoline refiners and not the consumers.
Paul Roberts, you want to add anything to that?
Well, yeah, to the extent that the caller is encouraged to take if that tax relief were enacted and the caller and many people like him were encouraged to take that cross-country driving trip and thereby used, pushed up the demand for fuel in a fuel-constrained situation, that's going to drive up price. I think, the tax relief, the price relief, works only in a sort of an ideal, sort of perfect world where you can freeze the market. In the real world, you can't. The market's going to immediately respond to the higher demand that will be stimulated by the price relief. And in fact, futures traders will bid up the price of gasoline contracts well before, as soon as the tax was moving, as soon as the tax relief was moving through Congress. That's how quickly the market anticipates what consumers are going to do.
Well, tell you what, let me just quickly reintroduce you, Paul Roberts. And Chris Canito, let me thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And he's Associate Professor of Economics at the University of California, Davis, and a Faculty Research Fellow at the National Bureau of Economic Research, talking about this proposed gas tax holiday and whether it makes economic and environmental sense. Paul Roberts staying with us for the rest of the hour. He's a journalist, wrote a book called The End of Oil. He's got a forthcoming book called The End of Food. And we've got a full bank of calls here at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Paul, I just wanted to follow up on a couple of things in terms of helping our listeners and myself included understand the sort of demands on oil and this supply-demand relationship. As you said, the demand is increasing, China and India. We've got this weakening dollar. There are questions about, refineries and their capacity. They're also speculators, and I wonder if you could talk a bit about or explain, the role of speculators when it comes to gas prices and gas availability.
Well, it's a very complicated picture. There's a sort of a simple answer, and that is this. If the dollar is getting weaker, then speculators, just traders generally, want to hedge their investments. They want to hedge their bets by investing in things, in this case commodities, whose price trends are going up. And so they basically want to rebalance their portfolios. If they have assets that they feel the value is declining because they were dollar-denominated, they will want to hedge those bets. And so they buy up commodities futures contracts, in the case, let's say, wheat or corn or oil, because they know that the price for those is just going up.
Right.
And the challenge there is that the more contracts are just like the underlying commodity itself, the more demand there is for those contracts, the higher the price goes. So it's sort of a self-fulfilling, it's a sort of a vicious circle. So that's one factor that's going on. Again, the dollar getting weaker is a factor that's weighing in. In Europe, people who deal in euros, and the euro is much stronger against the dollar, they're feeling far less pain with higher fuel prices because fuel is priced in dollars. So sort of an American, this is very much an American problem in that sense.
I wonder, too, about just inefficiencies. I mean, I know there are specific things people can do just to get better mileage out of their cars, making sure their cars are inflated, you know, traveling the speed limit. But also looking, and one of you had mentioned earlier that we seem to go from crisis to crisis. But we haven't increased CAFE standards, have we, for what, how many decades?
Decades. They're CAFE classic. I mean, we're really...
Is that right?
Yeah, we're sort of a 1980s... We have a 1980s energy policy. And the one in the 1980s was kind of from the 1970s. So we're retro when it comes to energy policy in this country. And so we're... You know, inefficiency is huge. We could have been, as Chris was pointing out, we could have been dramatically improving the efficiency of not just our cars, but our entire infrastructure. But a lot of the push to get better efficiencies, that push comes from higher prices. When the price of oil goes up, you suddenly have a great incentive to save oil. So you're willing to invest in cars, buy cars that are get more miles per gallon. As soon as the price drops, and that's the, you know, what all commodities do, their price rises and falls cyclically. As soon as the price drops, though, we stop being worried about efficiency. And it goes away from public consciousness, and if the public's not worried about it, policymakers aren't either. And so that's really the sort of the trap we've been in, is that every time we get, you know, we see the light on energy efficiency, we lose our interest, we lose momentum, and we go back to the status quo.
And so you're saying that high prices, and I guess consistent or continued high prices, change behaviors.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, that's been shown again and again. You know, we're finally seeing that. Now what sort of works against that, though, is that you build yourself an infrastructure, a system, and that includes highways or lack thereof, includes public transit or lack thereof, includes cars in terms of the size of the cars, the efficiency of the cars, and then once that's in place, it's very hard to change. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, prices are high, but a lot of consumers have very few options in terms of changing their behavior. You know, you may live 50 miles from work because that was where you could buy, it's where you could afford to buy a house, was 50 miles from where you worked. So you're stuck driving to work, and maybe there is no convenient mass transit available to you. So you're stuck. You can't drive halfway to work. You can't drive the kids halfway to school. We're locked into our driving patterns in many respects. And that, you know, changing that requires rethinking land use. It requires rethinking how we prioritize our spending for highways and public transit, which, of course, underlines the silliness of a gas tax holiday. And you can make the same argument about our auto fleet. Yes, consumers can choose to buy smaller cars, and the evidence suggests that they are now finally, after years of high prices, they have finally been persuaded that this is not a temporary price spike and that they may be living with high prices for a while, so they're now altering some of their car buying behavior. We're seeing much less interest in the, you know, mega cars. The challenge there, though, is that even if every consumer who is going to buy a new car tomorrow went down to the lot, there's a finite number of small cars available.
That's right.
Because, you know, Detroit and the rest of the automakers want to meet everyone's needs. And so until that signal works its way through the auto business. You know. So the point is that these things all take time. It takes time to sort of transform an energy economy, and that doesn't play well in the campaign season when consumers are hurting. They want relief now.
Well, you know what, let's get back to our callers, and we've got Tim from Doylestown joining us this morning on Radio Times. Hi, Tim. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say that I've already changed my behavior based upon the gas prices. I recently had a trip up to Boston. Instead of driving, I decided to take the train and then take mass transit around Boston. Aside from just the minor inconveniences, I really didn't save a lot of money, but I guess I just felt like I was trying to do my part with the environment and, you know, just not having to fill up the tank one more time.
Would you do it again, Tim?
I probably would if the gas prices stay as high as they are right now. And, right. and I mean, by all indications, it's just going to keep going up. So I think using mass transit just seems like a better option whenever I can do it.
Well, I appreciate you calling into Radio Times. And Paul Roberts, oftentimes we get calls, people saying, well, you know, well, what can I do? This is a massive problem. And we're hearing Tim made this decision. I hear a little bit of reluctance in his voice, but he made this decision to try to use public transit to get to Boston. I mean, does that count?
Yeah, it does. It's absolutely. I mean, I think people have to make those decisions. I mean, I think people are sort of waiting for someone to tell them what to do, either mm-hmm. government to come up with some program that's going to save the world, or the market to deliver a sort of an unmistakable signal. It's not going to come. People know what to do. I mean, they know what reducing their use of fuel means. You might have to take public transit one time a week or twice a week. But again, the longer term, we have to be thinking of the longer term horizon here. Not going to do to just do short fixes. Start rebuilding the entire system, and that takes a little more complex thinking than just choosing to take mass transit once a week.
Let me just raise one question before we have to take our other break, and this was just doing some reading for today's show, that there was a study from Carnegie Mellon University saying that when you really calculate the costs of a barrel of oil and you calculate foreign policy, the actual cost is closer to $200 a barrel. Does that square with your analysis?
Yeah, I mean, if we start, you know, looking at the cost of the Fifth Fleet and our military costs for kind of keeping the Middle East stable so that, you know, oil can flow out of there with few interruptions, if we start calculating the cost of, you know, the asthma victims in all the metropolitan areas, you know, who are suffering from, you know, tailpipe pollutants, start calculating all these sort of external costs and add them to the price that you actually pay at the gas pump, you know, if we did, we'd be paying much more. If we saw what our gasoline and diesel actually cost, it'd be much higher. And that's sort of been there's been a movement among policy analysts to sort of come up with a way to correctly price energy and to recognize, first of all, that, you know, the century or so that we've had of really bargain prices in energy, those have been artificially low because we've mm-hmm. ignored the cost, these external costs. And what's the chickens that are coming home to roost right now are those costs. We're realizing that, you know, the political stability of the Middle East is getting more and more expensive to maintain.
Well, you know what? Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation and also to our callers. That's Paul Roberts. We're talking about gas and energy policy, this proposed gas tax holiday. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Borgata Hotel Casino and Spa supports WHYY and presents comedian Bill Maher in concert Saturday, May 31st at 8 p.m. Bill Maher at Borgata's Event Center in Atlantic City, 866-904-TIX or theborgata.com.
Morris Arboretum supports WHYY and announces its Garden Discovery Series with special events on the first Saturday of every month from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. beginning in April. Participants will explore little-known parts of the garden, learn secrets of nature, and more. The Garden Discovery Series is open to the public with regular garden admission. For event locations, details can be found online at morrisarboretum.org.
We're very near the end of the spring membership drive here at WHYY, and we have a challenge from the Independence Foundation. If we hear from 350 people during Radio Times during this spring drive, they will give us $10,000. Here's that number to call, and it's 1-888-345-9499. You can also pledge online at WHYY.org. It's important that we stay on track and meet this challenge as well. Thank you very much.
Support for WHYY's Health and Science Reporting Bureau is provided by the Philadelphia Healthcare Trust, a foundation committed to advancements in healthcare delivery, research, and education.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with journalist Paul Roberts. He writes about economics, technology, and the environment. He wrote a book called The End of Oil, and he's got a forthcoming book called The End of Food. We invited him to join us today on Radio Times to talk about this gas tax holiday that's been proposed by both John McCain and Hillary Clinton, criticized, I should say, by Barack Obama. And this gas tax holiday is part of a broader discussion about energy and economic policy. Let me get back to our callers, and we've got Bill from Cochranville joining us. Hi, Bill. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. Thank you. I can't be struck, can't help but be struck by the irony that I'm driving through Lancaster County right now looking at Amish walking along the side of the road and thinking about the irony of the timing of this call.
Yeah.
And this topic. I was calling to sort of take issue with one of your guests. It might have been Mr. Roberts, I'm not sure, who claimed that the oil companies were kind of unwitting benefactors in this boon in the huge profits that they're reaping right now. I can relate a personal story of mine when I was a grad student. One of my professors, who's an electrochemist, who was involved in researching using photocells to split water to generate hydrogen, looking for alternate energy sources, who told us that a lot of his colleagues had their patents bought up, and guess who the purchasers were? It was the oil companies. So to claim that the oil companies haven't had a hand in engineering the prices and the situation that exists today, I think, is probably naive at best and dishonest at worst.
Well, Bill, I think it was Chris Knittle who said that, but let me give Paul Roberts a chance to just weigh in on your comments and to talk a bit about oil companies and oil company profits. Paul, go ahead.
Well, the caller's right that the oil industry has historically done its best to sort of keep any alternatives, any threats to their business from emerging. It was Chris that made that comment, though. So,
that's okay.
But I think that, you know, so the industry has been very successful and very clever at keeping its position as strong as possible. I will grant you that. But I will also say that the industry wouldn't have nearly a strong position had we as consumers, and I mean consumers at all levels, from individuals up to businesses, if we had chosen a path away from oil. We have managed to persuade ourselves that the problem isn't that serious or is temporary, and haven't changed enough of the way that we consume energy. So it takes two to tango. And, you know, the oil industry is happy. You know, they are delighted to profit from our ignorance and our obliviousness. But ultimately it will come down to us making decisions to change, to fundamentally change the way we use energy. And, you know, to continually point at the nefariousness of the industry, although it may be accurate, I don't think, at the end of the day, is very constructive.
You're saying look in the mirror, too.
Absolutely.
Bill, thanks for the call. Let me get Jenna from Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Jenna. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I couldn't agree with Paul more that, you know, the days of low gas prices are gone forever. And conservation is a great short-term thing to do. But really, there does need to be a windfall profits tax, which will never be passed by this Congress and this president. But maybe next time around, we could get a windfall profits tax, part of which could be used to invest in a state-of-the-art public transportation countrywide system, but also to invest in almost a Marshall Plan-type approach, have every university, every think tank, everybody devoted to getting us off dependency on foreign oil. It's, you know, big oil is the past, and we're headed down a road towards being a second-rate power if we don't adapt and move in a different direction.
Oh, those are interesting points, Jen. And let me toss them over to Paul Roberts. This idea of a Marshall Plan, I mean, in a sense, marshalling all of our resources and technology and intelligence to try to grapple and solve this problem. Paul?
Well, you know, if we did sort of recognize and acknowledge the energy crisis as something that was, you know, the moral equivalent of war, as a certain Democratic president argued a couple decades ago, and we did devote the commensurate, you know, volume of funding, we would have some answers. You know, we so underfund energy research in this country that it's pathetic, and we instead rely on the market, and we have this notion that the market will sort of choose the most efficient way to spend available funds. The market will recognize that, you know, high prices from oil, you know, signal that it should be doing something, that it should come up with alternatives, and the market will sort of build us a new energy economy. And I call this sort of faith-based energy policy because it's really based on faith, which I think is misplaced. You know, the truth is, although the market is devoting a lot of dollars to alternatives, it's choosing alternatives that are, in many cases, not the best alternatives.
Like biofuels?
Biofuel is a great example. Biofuels looked good to many people a couple years ago. I don't think anyone anticipated, or at least many in the ethanol sector did not anticipate that grain prices would go this high. They surely didn't, you know, they surely weren't looking for the public relations black eye that they're getting right now. But, you know, this is an example of something that wasn't very well thought through. And you can see similar dynamics across the landscape when we're talking about energy research. The kinds of projects that get the funding are the ones that have immediate payoff. Ethanol, corn-based ethanol, looked to have an immediate payoff. I mean, right now, ethanol refineries are losing a lot of money, but initially it looked to be the one that would return profits the soonest. And so that gets the research dollars and the research attention. And what is sort of neglected are the more esoteric technologies that don't have the short-term payoff, but might potentially have a much larger payoff, and also might be able to address some of these larger questions like climate and environmental concerns. And yet those are the ones that get neglected, and that focus is really where, you know, that's a rightful role for government. That's where government should be spending money. And but that, of course, is a very tough argument to make at a time when raging budget deficits.
Jenna, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me get Mark from Wilmington to join us. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I agreed with the last caller that we should start shoring up our public transportation systems. I'm wondering, could we keep the tax and not give us a holiday from the tax and utilize those funds to shore up the various public transportation systems in the localities where the taxes are collected, so either on a statewide level or a citywide level? And also, mother is the necessity of invention. If we are all of a sudden having to pay the same kind of prices that they do in Europe, you know, I've traveled in Europe for over 20 years, and they've been paying $5 or the equivalent of about $5 a gallon for gas, mm-hmm. and now, you know, it's a big shock to us. Well, we've been spoiled over the years, and maybe we're just having to tighten the belt at this point. But we do have to address the needs of, let's say, economically advantaged people and figure out a way to deal with that, maybe through public transportation.
Well, Mark, I appreciate your call. And also, as a mother, I appreciate that you said mother is a necessity of invention, but I think you meant to say a necessity is the mother of invention. But
a mother of invention, that's correct.
Exactly.
Well, no, my household, it was the mother was the necessity of invention.
Well, in my household, too, of course. But you know, Paul Roberts and Mark talks about I was so taken with the mother's necessity of invention, I forgot what he was talking about. If I can just shift gears maybe here just slightly, and one thing that the president said earlier this week was this idea, or I guess Nancy Pelosi was talking about releasing the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as a way of helping solve some of the rising costs of oil. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think that in this case, the president is absolutely right. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve has to be kept in reserve as a sort of an emergency measure, and we're not in an emergency. I mean, yes, it hurts, and it's going to be very painful for many people. And we may see, as one of the callers pointed out, failures of tourism-based industries this summer. I mean, that is an unfortunate side effect of the recession that we're in. But if we start messing with the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, for something like this, you know, what will we have in reserve when things really get serious? I mean, that petroleum reserve is to be used in the case that, say, Saudi Arabia is taken over by fundamentalists and stops exporting oil. That's what that's for. It's not for prices that are, for most of us, an inconvenience. And I think the president, and I generally don't agree with many of his energy policies at all, but in this case, I believe that he's right to stand firm on that, not to let political considerations affect the management of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
Well, let me throw another one at you. He talks about ANWR, drilling in ANWR. Would that help to not just solve the country's economic needs, but our energy needs, but help mitigate some of the problems associated with high prices that people feel?
No.
No. I mean, in a word.
That's sort of classic Bush. And he did not, certainly wasn't the first to propose that. I mean, you know, the amount of oil, he's talking about 1 million barrels a day that we might be able to extract from ANWR, and that would translate to about 26 million gallons of gasoline. And he's throwing around these big numbers, but he's not putting them in the context of how much oil we use, you know, currently. An extra 1 million barrels a day, it would, you know, it's less than a 20th of what we're consuming now. Further, he doesn't mention that it would take 5 to 7 years to get that much oil flowing, if indeed that much oil exists there in ANWR. And, you know, that would come at great political cost. I mean, the political cost that would be incurred by an administration that pushed that would be so staggering. You know, you're going into the pristine wilderness, and even if the president says it can be done in an environmentally sensible way, it would still be a huge public relations black eye for the White House. And further, you could get far more barrels of oil simply by ordering Detroit to improve its fuel economy standards.
Well, you know, let me just jump in here quickly, reintroduce you. That's Paul Roberts, and I'm Marty Moscoane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY FM in Philadelphia.
And good morning. I'm Susan Greenbaum here with my colleague and friend, Alan Tu. We're two of the producers of Radio Times. And, boy, this Marty doesn't stop, does she?
No, she never stops.
Like,
and she
bunny.
Always brings in, like, an incredible amount of curiosity and energy, no matter what the topic is.
I just want to talk about, like, shoes or flowers
yeah,
or something.
Exactly. Well, we can come up with that for next week
right.
on Radio Times. Folks, here's where things stand, by the way. You know we have an Independence Foundation challenge. What you may not know is it ends tomorrow.
We don't
at
have
12
a show
noon.
For tomorrow, but we have an Independence
Yeah, exactly.
Challenge.
We're still working on a show for tomorrow. But 12 noon tomorrow, the deadline hits for the Independence Foundation challenge. At stake is $10,000 for WHYY. The goal is 350 people pledging their support during the 2 hours
of I think we're on our way,
times.
Though, right?
We are
we're
on
doing
our way.
Pretty well.
And the standing.
We've
do you have the update?
Oh, I had it somewhere.
All right, it's 288.
I think it was 240.
No. Well, it was. Now it's 288.
Oh, it's 288.
Of
okay.
350.
Okay,
in order
so we're
for us
getting
to
there.
Make this challenge. But folks, this is we've got 5 minutes.
I think we should give them the phone number though.
Wait, we've got 5 minutes today, and then we're only going to have like 10 minutes tomorrow in order to make this challenge because we take very little out of Radio Times. So let's do the phone.
All
number.
All right, here's the phone number for you to call: 1-888-345-9499, WHYY.org. That's the place to pledge online. Again, 1-888-345-9499. There are students here from Friends Central who volunteered to take your phone calls. No, all kidding aside, this is serious business. We would like to take the foundation, the Independence Foundation, up on their challenge, but we just can't do it without listeners like you. And this challenge was specifically aimed at listeners of Radio Times. We don't have the statistics we have tell
right.
us that we have a growing audience, and my hunch is our membership hasn't grown proportionally. Would that make sense?
Well, you know, I understand what you're saying because, I mean,
Radio Times audience gets bigger and bigger.
Well, one of the things, and one of the reasons
Thank you for all
that
your
we
calls.
That we need to encourage folks to become members during Radio Times is because when you think about Morning Edition or any of those shows, we take out proportionally so little time. We're only taking about like 5 minutes today
right.
for each hour.
Right.
So it doesn't give us much time.
We have to be productive.
1-888-345-9499. The drive ends tomorrow. We're trying to make a goal. Help
Thanks.
Us out.
And that's a goal. That's a membership pledged online. That ping you heard, WHYY.org is the place to pledge online. Again, that number, 1-888-345-9499, WHYY.org. Coming up tomorrow on Radio Times, I was kind of kidding. I think we do have a show. In the first hour of Radio Times,
me.
We're going to be talking about, which we do every Friday. We've done this uh-huh. for the past couple months. We talk about national politics. Politics, and I'm not sure who the guests are, Alan. But you can.
I'm
that
still
later.
Working on
okay.
that. So,
and
yeah.
in hour two, we're going to be talking about your memory. Look, We hope that we tap into your curiosity, that Marty talks about things that interest you. Maybe she talks about things that didn't interest you until you heard them.
The aircraft carrier show.
The aircraft carrier show.
That's one where
show.
You don't think, wow, I'm going to tune in for aircraft carriers. And then you listen, you're like,
that guy was
interesting.
1-888-345-9499-WHYY.org. That's the place to pledge online. Folks, this is the system on which public broadcasting is based. It takes folks like you who listen day in and day out to support public broadcasting. You know, it always blows my mind that when they tell us that just like 10% of our listeners are members
of
WHYY.
Look,
it's $50. That's the minimum level. You put it on a credit card. You get a year subscription to Newsweek magazine. Things are tight. You're making concessions in your budget everywhere. But we're hoping that you agree that this is a service that you need and rely on. And in a way, it's a necessity. Look, give us a call, 1-888-345-9499-WHYY.org. And we do appreciate each and every membership. You're all valued.
And we want you to show your support for everything that Marty does. And, you know, she's been doing for 20 years, Radio Times here in Philadelphia. Support it with a phone call, 1-888-345-9499. This last hour of Radio Times, Susan, as you
know, it's important.
We're talking about, you know, whether or not we should have that gas tax holiday or not. And that's a political debate that's going on. But all of us are feeling, you know, the increasing prices, whether it's for food or
this
gas.
This week we talked about increase. Mm-hmm. It's about the global food crisis.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Same. Right.
Well, and the thing is people, there's so much where your money has to go, but you still, we're asking you, even in these difficult times, to make WHYY a priority. And why? It's because think about what you get out of WHYY, how it actually changes your life. It makes a difference to you. If we make a difference to you, and I think we do, I'm asking you to just pledge just $50, 1-888-345-9499.
Again, you can pledge online at whyy.org. We say it takes about 91 seconds to make your pledge.